I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The Globe and Mail's Rod Mickleburg joins me now with Jeff Meggs. He's written a new book, The Art of the Impossible, Dave Barrett and the NDP in Power, 1972-1975. It's been described as a sympathetic account of the Barrett government, the election of Barrett in 1972, ending 20 years of social credit rule led by W.A.C. Bennett. What I think it is a history of the times and the large number of bills that the government put through in its 1,200 days in office. That the Barrett government was reforming and modernizing is without question. You see that in the number of initiatives that still stand today, the Agricultural Land Reserve, ICBC, the Ambulance Service, the C-Bus, and more. We'll go through some of the accomplishments of this government, the personalities, and more now. Rod Mickleburg is a senior writer with the Globe and Mail based here in Vancouver. He's worked at numerous papers, including the Penticton Herald, the Prince George Citizen, Vernon News, and the Vancouver Sun and Province, as well as the CBC. He was co-winner of the Michener Award in 1994 and was nominated for a National Newspaper Award in 1993. His last book was Rare Courage. This new book is from Harbor Publishing. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Rod Mickleburg. Mr. Mickleburg, good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Very good, yourself?
Good.
So are you, described on the jacket of the book as a senior writer at the Globe. I've seen you elsewhere described as a bureau chief. Is that?
Well, you know how things change in the newspaper business. It's true. I was bureau chief.
I see.
I'm no longer.
Yeah, but you're still part of the bureau. And
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
The great BC Bureau of the Globe and Mail.
Yeah, there's some great writers on there.
There are indeed.
Yeah.
By early, by often.
Indeed, yeah. So how did you and Megs come to write this book?
Well, we're longtime friends going way, way back. You know, so we often see each other socially and so on. And Jeff claims we both had the idea. I think I might have edged in a bit earlier than he did. But you know, I'd always talked about what a great book it would be on the Barrett years because I was around for some of it, and I remember it as just this wild and crazy few years that was as colorful as any in British Columbia political history. Plus, they did amazing things for which one sensed that they didn't get enough credit. But, you know, with those who know me know I'm often lots of talk, little action without a deadline. And Jeff found that he had some time on his hands a few years ago and knew I'd talked about it and suggested, and he had talked about it too. It was all my idea, absolutely not. But Jeff was the driver, really, to light a fire under me, and we collaborated, I think, overall, very, very well. So Jeff deserves a heck of a lot of credit for really getting this on the road and getting it done.
So how would you guys work? I mean, when we read the book, it seems that there's just one author.
Well, we divided up responsibilities, and of course we traded drafts, and we weighed in on each other's writing, and we had to. It was difficult sometimes structuring the chapters because I tended to write more theme-oriented chapters, and Jeff wrote more chronological chapters. And we had a very good editor, Silas White, at Harbor Publishing, and we managed to cobble it all together. And it actually worked surprisingly well, one might think. And I think Jeff is a very good writer, and I guess I can write okay too. And so. I think we're both quite proud of the finished product, and it was a true collaboration.
Yeah, it is a great read.
Thank you.
What's new in this book that we haven't read heretofore?
Well, in a sense, there are some behind the scenes things that went on that we don't know about that we didn't know about. Perhaps on the back-to-work legislation, the role of Jack Monroe of the IWA, who was in on it. This is this massive back-to-work legislation that the government passed towards the end of their term, and it put 50,000 workers in the private sector back to work. There really never had been anything like it, and this was an NDP government doing that. But there were splits within the union movement, and Jack Monroe of the very powerful in those days IWA was very much pro-NDP and on the outs with other elements in organized labor. And he was actually in on the bill, which caught everybody by surprise and had some role in drafting it. Now, he does make a reference to that in his own biography, but no one's really picked up on it. And we sort of go you know, we make a thing of that. And but also it just, I think it shows the human elements of a lot of the people involved in that era. We see them behind the scenes. We see them playing Monopoly. We see them playing poker. We see their off-guarded, colorful comments, in large measure because we had access to a wonderful, wonderful private journal by someone who was there at the time working for Barrett, Peter McNally, a former journalist, and he very generously gave us unrestricted access to a journal he kept at the time, and it's truly marvelous. And you know, so a lot of the color that we put into the book comes from that journal. And also we had the benefit of some political papers written a few years later when memories were fresh, and you know, really not much attention has been paid to that. And I think overall what's astonishing is that history has paid so little attention to this amazing 1,200 days, as you call it, and that's what the book does more than anything. It reminds people of what this government did and its accomplishments, and the legacy of what they did survive is all around us today. And really, there was a quick book right after the Barrett government, and it wasn't really very satisfactory. And so we've really shone a light on this amazing 39 months of BC political history, and it was just great fun. It was a wild time.
Yeah, and do you think that Dave Barrett and the Barrett government will be remembered differently through this book?
Well, I would hope so. I mean, I think, you know, as time goes by, my favorite song, you know, people are starting to look a little more fondly on the government, especially with Dave in quite bad shape. You know, health-wise, you know, you tend to look back with more fondness than perhaps you did at the time. And I mean, he just got the Order of BC, and if you read the description of why he got it, and I suppose this is, you know, it's a Liberal government in power in Victoria, you'd think it was right out of our book, because it's very, very sympathetic and does refer to all the accomplishments and the legacy of the Barrett government, which till now has been kind of dismissed as by historians as this kind of chaotic blip in BC's political history, almost like a Bermuda Triangle. Did it really happen? As you know, the they were out of control. They did too much too soon. They couldn't manage a peanut stand. They didn't know what they were doing, and they were ruining industry in the province, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so, really, we wanted to bring back attention to a lot of the accomplishments. I mean, it was a chaotic time. It was a chaotic government. But in spite of that, it's unbelievable what they did. I mean, they were just passing legislation like it was going out of style. I mean, it was just like they passed like over 300 bills. I think we averaged more than two bills a week.
Yeah.
And many of them have stood the test of time. Not all, of course, but it was just frenetic. I mean, they really believed in doing everything that they felt needed to be done, and that's such a contrast to the cautious approach of politicians today.
Yeah, and it reformed a great deal of the province. I mean, little things.
Absolutely.
like Hansard in the legislature.
People forget there was no question period. You know, there was these short little sessions, and there was no Hansard. There was basically the opposition, you know, had a desk or two in an office, and, you know, some of them had to sit out in the hallway to get proper research facilities. They had no staff. You know, it was like the Dark Ages. And, you know, and some reforms like that were just so overdue as to be absurd. But others were, like, breathtaking, like freezing all agricultural land in the province. I mean, this is unheard of. It was astounding. And yet, which led to the agricultural land reserve that we enjoy today. And every time I fly into Vancouver and I see all those green fields there instead of condos, I say, thank you, Dave Barrett government.
Yeah. Now, did you cover the Barrett government in the?
I was a young labor reporter for the you know, not at the beginning, but towards the end, I was there.
Right. And so the one thing that I found interesting in your book is the discussion of how the press treated Barrett. I mean, people like Alex MacDonald say that, you know, the press was slanted against them. You know, you talk of this triumvirate of fathering him, Marjorie Nichols and Webster.
Yes.
What was the relationship with the press, and do you think that had a role in his undoing in 1975?
You know, I do think it had a role. Now, it's hard to, I mean, they got thumped pretty badly because even though they held their share of the popular vote at 39%, which showed that there was still support for the government out there, but the right was very, very united under Social Credit and Bill Bennett, and, you know, it was tough for Barrett to crack that. But having said that, I mean, not all my friends in the media agree, but I think that, and there were sympathetic people in the media too, but like the main power players and the newspaper owners and the editorial writers and the cartoonists and even the photographers, they really recoiled at what the Barrett government was doing, and business was aghast because, I mean, they took them on. They took on business. It wasn't this cautious approach of today. It was, you know, the mining industry and the forest industry and the Howe Street Boys. I mean, they wanted that government out, and, you know, they had newspaper owners agreed with them. And you mentioned the triumvirate of Webster, Fotheringham, and Nichols. You know, I think, I mean, there was lots to criticize about this government. They weren't perfect by any stretch of the imagination. I hope the book points that out, that they made a lot of mistakes. So good for the media to point all that stuff out. But I think there was an element in some parts of the media that no matter what the NDP did, they were like, it was kind of sinister. What are they up to? It was kind of a double standard. And so if there was a minor gaffe by the government, it was really blown up into a major gaffe rather than treated as a gaffe, but a minor gaffe. And I think that did prevail in the media, and some of the media coverage was, of course, frankly hysterical. I mean, you had U.S. reporters coming up and saying this with Barrett was a Allende of the North, and stuff like that, and was, you know, engaging in quasi-Maoist policies and so on. And the famous example of Marjorie Nichols, who took a totally routine bill talking about providing emergency services if there was some kind of environmental or natural disaster, and saying awesome sweeping powers, worse than the War Measures Act. I mean, it was like, it was insane, that kind of treatment. And then, having said that, Barrett was often his own worst enemy in treating with, he didn't understand the way the media worked. So he often didn't do himself any favors with his constant criticism, especially of the Vancouver Sun, chewing out Marjorie Nichols in an absolutely despicable way at one point. He just snapped and he laced into her in very, very foul language. Yeah. And that's just not on. And there was a kind of a siege mentality within the NDP and the media. And so even people who, you know, the so-called fair objective reporters, I mean, they had a tough time too. So it was really a war. But I think on balance, the government can be criticized for some of that, but also the media can be criticized for that too. I don't think the media coverage was as fair and balanced, perhaps, as it might have been.
Now, the other thing that I was thinking about in reading the book, or I do this when I read Canadian political books, is think of the what ifs. You know, what if in 1969 Thomas Berger had done better, or what if they'd won a second term? I mean, that's just, you know, fun to think about things like that, isn't it?
Well, the what ifs are amazing. I mean, no one expected Barrett to win this 1972 election. They were so used to Wacky Bennett winning, but the Socreds ran like just a terrible campaign. And if they'd had any sophisticated people in their back rooms, maybe that wouldn't have happened, and Barrett might have been finished as leader, because there were divisions within the NDP at that time, and Berger, of course, ran a disastrous, and a great what-if is it was very, very close, the leadership campaign between Tom Berger and Dave Barrett, very, very bitter back in 69, and the labor movement delivered just about all their votes to Tom Berger, which is one reason Barrett had no time for organized labor, like their leadership, but it was close, and if Barrett had won that election, there's a great what-if. What would have happened in 1969 if Wacky had won again? Because in 1969 against Berger, he won his biggest majority ever. Barrett might have been finished. You know, well, history is full of what ifs.
Yeah. Did you guys reach out to Bill Bennett at all and try to talk to him?
No. We thought about it, but he plays a role in the book, certainly, in engineering the defeat of the NDP. I mean, people underestimated him, and Barrett definitely underestimated him, and the NDP underestimated him, and there was all this taunting, I think quite unseemly taunting of Bennett as daddy's boy and stuff like that. And because he was a rookie, he was raw, he was awkward, he was shy, there was no politician in him, and he was terrible in the House, but he was tough. And I think they really underestimated his ability to unite the right for the next election. And what turns out is it didn't matter what happened in the legislature. It didn't matter what happened in the campaign. People had decided to vote for Bill Bennett. And he had a terrible campaign in 1975. Barrett had a great campaign in 1975, but it didn't matter. People were going to the polls, and they were going to vote out. They weren't going to vote for Bill Bennett. They were going to vote against Dave Barrett. And there's this vignette that I quoted from, let's remember Fotheringham, a wonderful columnist at his best and a terrific writer, talked about this liberal he knew who said that he had never voted Socred in the past in 75. He said he was going to drink basically half a bottle of gin, go out and vote Socred, come back and vote and drink the rest of the bottle, and like he couldn't believe that he'd voted for these horrible social credit people, but business really wanted the NDP out, and a lot of other people. It wasn't just business; a lot of the old social credit constituency came back to the social credit, and it was really an anti-NDP vote in 1975.
So we're closing in on another election in the spring, which by most objective accounts say that the NDP has a good chance of winning, or they'll do very well, at least. Do you think this book will be useful to them in terms of emulating what works and perhaps learning from what didn't?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, I think it's valuable for them to read it because the book is called The Art of the Impossible, in which you can dream of maybe carrying politics beyond the cautious, pragmatic approach. And that's what we took that from a speech by Vaclav Havel.
Mm-hmm.
But Adrian Dix, of course, he's set on pragmatism, caution. I mean, he's the famous line by Barrett at the beginning of their government, are we here for a good time or a long time? And he opted for the good time. In other words, let's do everything all at once. And Adrian Dix is very much the opposite of that. He wants to be there if he is elected for the long time, and I think he may well take from this book, we better not do everything all at once, and he might take some, like, relations were not great between the Barrett government and the NDP party itself, and also the labor movement, and I think that hurt the Barrett government, and I think Adrian Dix is very conscious of that, and wants to be on good terms with both the labor movement and the NDP party. Now, both are much different than they were back in 72, but I think for the NDP, when they read that book, they'll take some pride, though, in what their party did during that amazing time, 39 months. It was wild, it was crazy, it was colorful, it was fun, it was all those things. But they left a legacy, and that's still with us. And if you're an NDPer, I mean, the book is reasonably sympathetic, although not entirely so. Certainly
right.
The warts are there, no question about it, and the mistakes are there. But one would think they would take some pride in what an NDP government did for British Columbia, and maybe that's a good feeling for them heading into the election. But these times are so different, and the opportunities are so much more limited than they were in 72, that really, in a pragmatic sense, they're on what to do wrong. I mean, they know all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they'd find it a pretty good read.
Yeah. Finally, after your old friend Tom Hawthorne was on the program, I had lunch with him. We were chatting about books and the sort. Why aren't there books like yours? I mean, why isn't there a book on the NDP years from the 90s or the Campbell years even?
Well, there are. A guy named Daniel Gawthorpe, he wrote a book on Harcourt. Harcourt put out his autobiography.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure there's a book out about Glenn Clark.
Judy Tayabji did one.
Who?
Yeah.
I know what you mean.
she did one. Gordon
Wilson must have got something out there, but
yeah.
You know, you think that books on BC politics aren't big sellers. I mean, you know, chapters, and I don't know who you blame for this, you know, their first shipment of our book, they took 4 copies on Robson, right?
I mean, wow.
As if, you know, my joke was they probably thought, well, that should hold us till Christmas. You know, BC politics, hey, it's not, you know, 50 Shades of Grey or whatever. So, you know, but it's selling fairly well, so we're happy with that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, let's face it, it rises and falls on the quality of the book. I mean, you can't, you know, a dull book on BC politics might not sell that well.
Yeah.
But a good book, like our book, he
yeah.
said modestly, I think people are enjoying the read, and that's what people tell me. They it's a real page-turner, and there is a way to make politics come alive, but you have to not just talk about policy and legislation and so on. You've got to talk about the people involved, because often they're fascinating, and what they do in their unguarded moments and what they do at home and, you know, the debates that go on behind closed doors. You got to make it come to life, and that's one thing I hope we did with our book, is that we made, goodness knows we had a lot of material to work with, but I hope we made it come to life and realize these were real people and very human, for better, for worse, and they just laid it all out there for 39 amazing months.
Indeed. Rod, I'm a big fan of your work. You're a favorite of mine on Twitter. Continued good luck with the book.
I'm master of the 140 characters. How did I ever write a book?
This is a necessary book. It's called The Art of the Impossible, Dave Barrett and the NDP in Power, 1972 to 1975. It's from Harbor Publishing. Rod Mickleber, one of the book's authors, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.